you some of my thoughts, and then I'll take your you know, your response here. So I think it goes to, so I think there's like a basic tension that between feeling connected to what we say and feeling connected to what our ancestors composed. Now the question is, can we add tfilos, can we add kinos to the liturgy? So right, there are two sources. The Gemara in Brachos talks about two different sources for how tefillah was composed. So you know what they are, right?
Composed
or instituted. Instituted. What are the two tefillah? So either is avos or korbanos. So I think those are really two different models for how we understand tefillah. So the model of avos is spontaneous, right? In other words, Avram said what he said, Yitzhak said what he said, Yaakov said what he said. Okay, so Avram was in the morning, Yitzhak prayed in the afternoon, Yaakov prayed in the evening. But there is no formal, there's no fixed text. It's whatever, you know, whatever came to mind, right? Whatever came to mind, whatever Avram felt. And there's a greater feeling of connection when you're spontaneous. And so you feel more personal, right? In other words, if you say something that's personal to you, you personalize something, you're more connected to it, right? So that's the avos. Korbanos is more rigid. Korbanos has to be at this time, this korban, right? Very fixed, very rigid. So on the one hand, it seems like, you know, today's day and age, we're into our own personalized spirituality. So we would argue, okay, so we are into our own personalized spirituality. So therefore, I would argue that, right, we want, like avos, we like spontaneous.
That was spontaneous, Kina.
Right, that's spontaneous, right. At the same time, right, we have a, at the same time, I would argue that, what's the advantage of having something rigid? Why would you want it to be rigid and routine? It sounds boring, right?
It's lasting,
right. Now, this is what I do. I'm defined by this. Every day I put on clothing. Every day I pray. It becomes part of my routine. And obviously the challenge is to make the routine spontaneous, right?
Like, you don't wear like leather shoes, but everything else besides for kina, it's set, let's say, right?
Everything except for what?
I mean, like, you're not going to wear leather shoes. You're not going to...
For what do you mean?
Let's say.
Oh, yeah, okay, we'll get to...
Oh.
Right. I'm saying, right, there are obviously different things, but I'm saying it's in general... What I'm saying in general, it's an interesting question. How do you achieve spontaneity when it comes to prayer? So I think there are two ways. So let's just take Shemot Esrei. So on the one hand, I think you can achieve spontaneity in one of two ways. So one way is, you know, in the Shema Koleinu or the Rafeinu, you add your own little piece. So there is some room for spontaneity. And the other spontaneity is your kavana, your intent. In other words, we say the same words, but we attach different intent, different meaning to it. Okay? I think also that getting back to your issue in the debate regarding adding a day of Yom HaShoah to Tisha B'Av, so many in the yeshivish world oppose a separate day of commemoration, but they said, like Rav Schwab had a prayer, right? He had a kiddah, and who and the Bava Rebbe had a special kiddah. So in this regard, Rabbi Soloveitchik was the most machmir, he was the most harif, the most strict when it came to Tisha B'Av. Not only did he feel you shouldn't observe Yom HaShoah, because you can't add to there's one day of tragedy, that's Tisha B'Av, but he also felt that you're not allowed to add any more kinos. He was against a special kina for the Holocaust. So the cutoff probably, so that's interesting, the cutoff was probably the Crusades of that area, or that in the Bali Tosfos. I think after that he was not a big fan. Let me read to you something that there was an article that Rabbi J.J. Schachter wrote about this debate, this issue, and this relates to our topic. He said, of course, there's no doubt on Tisha B'Av we should recite a special kiddah for those who were killed by Hitler. In the last Chorban, we lost many more people than in the destruction of the first and second Bate Mikdash. Of course, the 6 million Jews deserve to be eulogized on Tisha B'Av. but we do so within the frame of reference of the kinos we already recite on that day. Instead of Vilna, we mention Worms or Mayence. Right, those are the kehilos, those are the communities that died, that were destroyed or attacked in the Crusades. They're called the kehilos Shum, Shapira, Vermaisa, Magenza. Those are the three primary German communities, and they were attacked during the Crusades. It does not make much difference because the scenes described and the words of despair, mourning, and grief are the same. One has in mind to remember and experience the catastrophe, the disaster that occurred in the 40s of the 20th century within the frame of reference of what is described here as having taken place in the 11th century. When we recite the kinos about Speyer, Mayence, and Worms, about the communities that were destroyed, the people exterminated, and the Gedolei Yisrael killed by the Crusaders, we must remember that what is described here, there, happened not only then in 1096, but in the 1940s. Exactly the way the Torah centers were destroyed in Germany in the time of the Crusades, were the centers of Torah destroyed in Poland, Lithuania during the Hitler period. It happened throughout Europe, particularly in Central and Eastern Europe, Lithuania and White Russia. We need to see these kinos not only as a eulogy for those killed in medieval German communities, but for everyone killed in Warsaw and Vilna and the hundreds and thousands of towns and villages where millions of faithful, devoted, and dedicated Jews lived a holy life, a sacred life, and a committed life, and where they were simply exterminated. So that is Rabbi Soloveitchik's position, that basically, when you read about the kinos of the Crusades, you should have in mind now. In other words, everything is seen through the lens of, you know, of the kinos that were originally written. Now his grandson, Rav Moshe Lichtenstein, disagreed with his grandfather. And let me just read to you what he says here, okay? This is Rav Aaron Lichtenstein's son, who was probably one of the primary now leaders, of the Gush. And he says, in an article published a few years ago, one of the Rav's grandchildren, Rav Moshe Lichtenstein, was critical of his grandfather's position. Seemed to me that the state acted correctly in not accepting the Rav's proposal, he wrote. That was Rav Soloveitchik tried to get Menachem Begin to change the date of Yom HaShoah from Yom HaShoah to Tisha B'Av. So, but eventually it didn't work out. And he said he argued that direct, unmediated contact with the brutality of the Holocaust via survivors still alive in significant numbers in the state of Israel cannot result in anything but setting aside a special day to commemorate it. Whether in reality the Holocaust is sui generis and unique or is fundamentally anchored in the millennia-old Jewish experience of tragedy is, he argued, frankly irrelevant. As long as there are many survivors still alive in the state of Israel, the relationship of the state qua state to the Holocaust needs to be animated by emotions and feelings and not by objective, rational categories of thought. Hence, out of respect, empathy, and sensitivity to the feelings of the survivors, the Holocaust must be officially treated by the state as belonging to a category all by itself and a separate day set aside for its commemoration is a necessity. Yes, wrote Rav Lichtenstein, the day may come when his grandfather's position might indeed be implemented, but to do so now, even more than a half century after the end of the war, would be premature. It would reflect a lack of awareness of the centrality of the Holocaust in contemporary Israeli life. At the present time, he argued, we are still too close to the event to subsume it under other earlier tragedies far removed from that which occurred to so many of those who are alive today. So the grandson says, fine, you, Rabbi Soloveitchik, classic Brisker, again, he was emotional, but he's a classic, rigorous, analytic thinker. He puts everything in categories. This fits here. When I read a kina of 1,000 years ago, I think about this event, and that's what he would do. He would read things. He would read things from, the destruction of the second base of Migdash, even the destruction of the first base, but he would tie it to a current day event. But most people can't do it. Most people, the Holocaust is so painful to them that you need something to personalize it, right? So that was the debate. And I think,
if you imagine if Tisha B'Av became Yom HaShoah, it would either change the nature of Tisha B'Av in all of our experiences, because if Tisha B'Av would become a very emotional holiday,
right,
you can easily tap into,
right,
as opposed to really have to work at it. And on the other hand, it could also be a detriment to Tisha B'Av, because then Tisha B'Av loses, it runs the risk of losing the larger picture,
exactly,
of our national history.
Yeah, when I gave a shiur about this, so my feeling was, just regarding this point, was that There's Tzvei Dinim in Tisha B'Av. There are two halachas in Tisha B'Av. Or actually in Yom HaShoah. There's Tisha B'Av is really about, it was our fault. It was like, you know, our sins caused this destruction. And so you could say that, you know, whenever bad things happen to us, so you subsume it all under the same category. It's very hard to argue that in Yom HaShoah, 6 million died due to our sins. Some have argued that, but it's very hard to argue that. Better left the question. And then, so Yom HaShoah for me is like the Yom HaGvurah, the never again, you know, we're never going to let. So that's, for me, like, it works out very well to split it into two. That the aspect of Yom HaShoah, which is the never again, which is we have to always fight anti-Semitism, we have to remember this, and we have to physically, you know, make sure that we try to eradicate, eliminate anti-Semitism when possible.
What's introspective?
In terms of, you know, this is part of a tragedy that we due to our sins. It's very hard to say, you know, it's very hard. But so, you know, it's okay to make it, you know, to dinim.
It's clearly a very complicated issue.
Right. And you know, and some make the argument, like, we try to make a big deal of Yom HaShoah here. You know, if not for kids' programs, you know, I just tell you, if kids were not, if we didn't have kids' programming, you know, singing or doing things on Yom HaShoah, okay, we would lose it. Okay, we get a small crowd. I'm saying because people forget. That's the reality. There is something to ritualizing, you know, an event. Tisha B'Av is a ritual. You know, Yom HaShoah is not such a ritual. There are those who want to make a Yom HaShoah Seder or other things. You know, we think that it's so progressive and like more, you know, not so religious. But at the same time, if you don't ritualize something, then forget about it. You know,
we're going to see in the next, you know,
we'll see.
Years.
Right. We're going to see. Well, hopefully we keep it alive. So, right. So I think that, you know, it's an interesting question. You know, what is the function of, and I think, you know, I was thinking about this question. I thought a lot about what Moshe is saying. It's much easier to just make up your own new prayer. Right? It's more spontaneous. It's more personalized. You feel more connected to it. You have to work much harder to look at a prayer from, you know, years ago and to connect it to a modern day event. In other words, we expect, I mean, let's face it, for many of us, tefillah is not so meaningful. You know, or different parts of tefillah are not so meaningful. In other words, let's say, take Shemot Esrei, right? So we're excited. We have a lot of kavana with Slach Lanu Avinu, we said, for Rafaedu. And I don't know if we have to take an exam, right, for your boards, right? They ask God for wisdom, right? So, but like the second half of the Bakashos about Vali Yerushalayim, maybe some people are very, very thinking about Yerushalayim or Al Tzadikim. So, I like to make the comment that tefillah is not a reflection of our values, but tefillah is a reflection of what our values should be. In other words, tefillah, you read that, you need to study tefillah, and you need to sort of say, oh, this is what we're supposed to be feeling like. This is what we're supposed to think about. So if Soloveitchik is able, because he studies tefillah, when he's reciting the tefillah, when he's reciting the kiddos, so he's able to connect, and to really dig deep and understand, you know, how what we're experiencing now is so connected to our past. And the power of Judaism is that we do now is connecting to a past, a glorious past of, you know, thousands of years old. So there's something very powerful of, you know, of saying a kinah 2,000 years ago and say, this is exactly what happened 70 years ago or 80 years ago. Then there's something very powerful if you can read the kinah and understand it and say this is mamish so connected. It requires work. But it's so connected to what happened 78 years ago. At the same time, like you said, you know, a shooting or whatever, you know, that to make up, you know, to always, you know, first of all, kiddos, prayers are, hopefully, are long-lasting. So you have to see, you know, again, the Holocaust was something of such great magnitude that, you know, maybe you can't ignore. So there might be a difference between a shooting. Again, these are all horrific tragedies. But you know, does it fit into a larger kina versus something of the magnitude of the Holocaust? I will say also, I just want to make a few other thoughts I have here, is that, you know, Rav Soloveitchik felt very strongly that you know, when it came to Kinos, so that was composed by great rabbis and Bali Masora. So some people would probably not be so excited, some rabbanim would not be excited, about just Stam, someone who's a great poet, you know, creating new, beautiful prayers that are somewhat moving. But, you know, if you read the Kinos, so very often many of the Kinos refer to this pasuk in Tanakh, this Mamar Chazal, this passage from the Gemara, this passage from a Medrash. So there's something that's, it's rich. It's not simply poetic, but it's rich in our history. And the question is, you know, can some of the modern day people who write beautiful poetry, can they do it? Again, it's much more personalized. Again, I would say, like, in an ideal world, you read the ancient text, just like that's what we do. We think about it. We study Chumash. We study Tanakh. We study with text that was written thousands of years ago. We study Gemara. We study all these ancient texts. And we try to make it relevant. We try. And the reason why so many kids go off that are not inspired is because it's hard to connect an ancient text of 2,000 years ago versus like a modern day book that you read or a modern day movie that's more exciting. It's much more work connecting. But once you find that connection, it's tremendous. So I think that's sort of like the balance between, you know, both of these points here. Between, on the one hand, you know, there is value, like the Baba Varav and most of Yeshivish world basically were in favor of having a special kiddush for the Holocaust. But Soloveitchik felt, no, everything is based on our Mesorah, and we have to work hard at it. And the question is, can you?
Did Soloveitchik have particular kinos that he felt access those Holocaust themes?
He would, throughout. You read some of the, you know, they've collected, you know, kinos, and he'll say when he reads this, he remembers, you know, when he talks about, Eit Torah ve'elom deha, one of the kiddush, where is Torah, where is its people learn? He remembers the story of someone who was in Vilna before the war. And in the war, before the war in Vilna, there was this shul, that shul, the other shul, describe all different things. And he comes back afterwards, after the war, and there's nothing. Eit Torah ve'elom deha. So, like, everything is connected. With Soloveitchik, the great Rav Soloveitchik, very famously, is really a side point, but his most famous defenses of the Mizrahi movement, he was comparing Joseph to the brothers. Famous article where he talks about Yosef was the Mizrahi party, and the other 11 brothers were the other movement, and they Yosef had these dreams, these visions he didn't know what he was dreaming about. He dreamed about some other world. There was Zionism, and the other brothers forget about it, and Yosef was right. By the way, when the eulogized of Yosef Ber Soloveitchik, he was also Yosef. So it was Yosef and everyone else, and he was right, everyone else wasn't. So but I'm saying, Rav Soloveitchik could take ancient texts, and he could apply it to modern day era. That's a beautiful thing. Not everyone could do it, so that's sort of the challenge. I will say also that, there might be a difference. You know, like, I changed the text for the, I asked the Shaila, you know, for the prayer for the U.S. government, that I want to make it neutral no matter who the president is, because I want this to be a prayer, just like the prayer for the State of Israel is not a prayer for the president. This was a much later prayer, I know, Saint Shulam Lachim. So that was in this, that started much later on, and that was basically to make nice to the ruler. It really wasn't some kind of, prayer to God that it was inspired by, some kind of lamentation. So different prayers are different. So there, yes, Rabbi Willick, who's a Talmud of Rabbi Soloveitchik, what I asked him is, okay, if I change the text, I want to avoid politics, depending if people are angry at the president or not. So he didn't think that was an issue. I don't think he would say the same thing about kinos. So it may depend. But I think the real issue is the following. I mean, it would be great, in an ideal world, it would be great to keep the old text and to darshan the old text and to explain how it's meaningful to us nowadays. That's like the ideal. We don't always achieve that ideal, and therefore we need to make up perhaps new prayers, new kinos at times in order to, but it has to be, it'd be good if they're by individuals, gedolim, who know how to, you know, use the text and reference Mamore Chazal to make us feel connected. But there is something very challenging about what the Rav expects from us, but there's something so beautiful if we can tap into it. And it really goes into the fact that we live in a world that we just, we have trouble davening because we don't study the davening. if we would study it, then I think we'd feel more comfortable, maybe not adding new prayers, but just, you know, connecting what we, you know, our events to the old prayers. So those are my thoughts, I guess.